Yeah, they are quite handsome chompers. I certainly am not ashamed of them in any way.
And we are live.
Babies.
You got, yeah. Yeah. Whose turn is it to do the intro?
I think it's mine. We're back with Tooth Talk here with the Tooth Man, Emilio. Yeah, that's all the nicknames I got.
The Tooth Man.
tooth talk with the Tooth Man.
Tooth Man, Bobby in the douche.
Yeah. Canines. What are we talking about today?
Oh my god. That's like, this feels like a nightmare show. Like, no. Yikes.
Yeah. Is that a nightmare that you've had, the one where you lose your teeth?
Oh, for sure. Definitely. Have you guys had that one?
I don't think so.
I don't think I've had it, but I've heard that it's pretty common.
Yeah, it doesn't really
happen to me. Oh, that's so funny. I'll have it once every year or two, I would say.
Jeez.
Used to be more frequently.
4 or 5 days.
Yeah, God.
It's just awful. Terrifying. Just
relentless. You know what I have? What I have with some frequency is dreams where I'm chewing gum and the gum sticks to my teeth in a way that makes it so that I can't, like, open them, and I have to, like, claw at the gum to get it out of my teeth.
Oh, no.
And I can't ever get it out completely, and then I just wake up.
You have more than one tooth-related dream.
Recurring. Man. Yeah, those are both recurring tooth. I think that second one is because I clench my jaw at night. I'm not a grinder, but I am a clencher. And I think maybe, like, my body's like, stop doing that. And then I'm like, I can't stop.
Shut up, body.
Yeah, you're stupid.
I'm in control. I do what I want, and this feels good.
If I want to slap you, I will make you slap you.
Stop hitting yourself.
Yeah.
Stop wearing out your enamel.
Oh, dear. Who's got a topic? I don't want my topic to be teeth. I need to just veering away from it as quickly as possible so you guys don't think that that's what I'm using my time for.
I was going to ask some follow-up questions.
No, I'm not interested.
Very well. I talked a lot last time, so if someone else had something to go first with, that would be great.
I've got a topic.
Yeah, you can go, Laz. I'll go for a second. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I don't quite know how this topic's going to work exactly, but it was something I was thinking about recently. I was thinking about, so let's see. I think, like, we've all had moments in our lives where there was something that was really big that was about to happen, and it could go either way, right? So I had this memory. So, okay, basically, like, there's something that, you know, professionally could happen at some point. You know, it's like one of these kind of, like, big moments. Not one of the biggest I've ever had, but, like, you know, just like something could happen or it couldn't happen. And I don't exactly know which way it's going to go. But it made me think of a time that was like probably 5 years ago now. And I was doing a negotiation for a code sale. So selling, you know, intellectual property, my code to, I guess, an investor, somebody who was interested in it. And it was like, I remember this moment where I was driving down to Rhode Island to do this deal or not do this deal. And we were in the final stage of negotiations. This was the day we were either going to sign or we were probably not going to do it. Like, we'd sort of come to that point. And so I didn't know what was going to happen. But I remember stopping at this diner on the drive down there. And I left super early because I was like, if there's traffic, I don't want to like miss this negotiation. This is like a big deal. Mm-hmm. Like this is like the culmination of almost a year of work and then like 3 months of negotiating. And it's like all going to come down to today, what happens. And it's either going to like change my life in some way. Like there was a significant like deal such that like it was like going to be like a big deal, or it was just not going to happen. And I was just going to move on and, you know, nothing was going to come of it. So I just have this, like, I had this recollection, and like, you know, this thing I'm talking about coming up recently is like not anywhere near that, but I just had this like recollection of sitting in this diner, and I ordered, you know, some eggs and some coffee, and just like sitting there kind of like trying to sort of be like relaxed, but also kind of feeling relaxed. Like I'd already done all the work and this was just like the final thing. And I just, it was such like a vivid moment. And so I guess my topic is just sort of wondering if you guys have had that you can think of, and maybe it's too on the spot, but like had a moment like that where something big was either going to happen or not going to happen. And you sort of knew ahead of time, like if this happens, this is a big deal. And if it doesn't happen, well then, you know, life goes on. But that moment right before it happened, is that something that like either of you guys remember?
Wow.
I have one, but you know,
no, you go, Christian.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's definitely well okay. I think I do have one question. Is this one where you knew that a thing was coming, or in retrospect, you were on the knife's edge?
Yeah. So let me give a little. So I would say probably that you knew something was going to happen either one way or the other. Maybe you didn't know the outcome, but you knew that there was an inflection point on the horizon in the near future. Mm-hmm, like this inflection point is coming. Either I'm going to make a decision. And I, you know, I think there are those like in the, I guess I'm not sure whether it's to say like personal or professional, because you know, everyone has those in personal lives too, like when they make decisions and in, you know, their relationships and stuff like that. But man, I don't know, maybe that's a similar sort of thing, but maybe not. But yeah, so I would say like, you know, something.
You see it, you know, so, okay. Got that's it. My, yeah, because you know, that's the, and perhaps the retrospect one is often sort of like, it reflecting relationships, because you often don't know what is, you know, what you're looking at until later. So maybe, yeah, that makes sense where we might go with more like professional ones. Like, okay, anyway. So the one that comes to mind for me is applying to graduate school for my doctorate. You know, at the time, I was in my final semester of college, which, as you both know, was like the second time I did college. And so, sorry, it was the final year of undergrad. And so I was actually in my mid-20s, and I had realized that I wanted to become a psychologist sort of with the year or past several months prior. And so I applied for grad school in that sort of fall of my of when I was 26. And then I just, you know, had to wait. Like, so I did all, you know, I did all this work. I was doing a research assistantship. I was, you know, working full time, and I was going to school in the evening full time. And I was really trying to make this career happen. And so I applied, and like I said, all you just do is wait, and you wait several months until one of the many places to which you applied let you know that they'd like for you to interview with them. And I applied to, you know, I don't know, a dozen places or something, which, by the way, cost hundreds of dollars to apply to those places. And so you're just waiting. And I was starting to get rejection letters from places. And I was sitting at my desk at the research assistantship I was doing, and one of the supervisors came in and, you know, was talking to me about my application to grad school and asking questions. And, you know, I just started wondering about whether or not I was going to, you know, get an invitation. And so then that supervisor leaves, and then I receive the phone call, and it is from the person who would become my future mentor, but she wanted to have a pre-interview with me. And then she offered me an interview, and then I got in there, and it was the only place that, you know, offered me an interview. It was the only place I got into. And had I not gotten into that program, I mean, maybe I would have applied again the following year and maybe gotten to some place eventually, but my life would have been just completely different. I live in the state where I went to graduate school now, right? Like, I met my wife during my time in graduate school. Like, all of these things happened, like, just completely different. So I knew it was a really big deal where going to graduate school would take me. And it was. And if I hadn't gotten in, I don't know. I mean, yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, I feel like there's a certain, you know, when you're in that position and just waiting, you want to believe that it doesn't, you know, whatever happens is fine, you know, and it's true, like, at some level.
Sure.
Like, you would have been
fine.
Figure
it out.
Yeah, like, it would have worked out. And, you know, when I was sort of in that position, that's how I wanted to feel too. Like, you know, whatever happens is fine. I can figure this out, and you know, life will go on, and just, but it's like, it will be so different. Like, it would have been so different. And it's like, that inflection point, like, or I feel like, yeah, that moment before the inflection point, like, I don't know. I just, like, yeah.
Yeah, and it turned out, like, you know, I applied my second to last semester of school and got in, you know, right as I was ending my last semester of school. And my grades were so bad that last semester. They were so bad. And I don't know if I would have even been...
You were, like mentally already checked out. Yeah.
I don't know if I would have even been looked at if I'd attempted to apply with all of my grades counting the following year.
I see. So, like, it legitimately would have been, you know, if you didn't make it in the first time under the good circumstances.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm very fortunate my program did not have to look at my final semester of grades for undergrad, because I think if they had, they might not have wanted me.
So do you, like, remember talking to that person on the phone? Like, when you said your advisor called to do, like, a pre thing, like, was that the moment where it was like you felt like this is very likely, or was it still kind of like up in the air?
It was very much up in the air. It was like a phone call pre-interview, and then the pre-interview went really well, and then she invited me out, and so I flew out, you know, spent all the money to fly there, spent all the money, you know, on short notice, spent all the money to stay there. And then had these really great interviews in person with multiple faculty. And then, you know, this incredible interview weekend where all the applicants kind of hang out for the weekend. And this is kind of typical for grad school when you had to fly out there. Yeah. And so, like, partied with, I mean, partied. like party with a bunch of applicants and current grad students. Several of those applicants were in my cohort, including one of my, you know, really close friends today. Another friend who was an applicant who decided not to go to that program, who, like, you know, a few years later, like, had a brief sort of, like, dalliance with, like, just, like, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember, yeah, Christian? Laz, you mentioned, like, you were having this breakfast and, like, this memory is, like, sticks with you. Did you do anything, Christian, to, like, relax yourself? Or were you just sort of on edge the whole time, like, going into that process?
You know, I was nervous. After the first conversation, the pre-interview, I thought, you know, that felt good. That felt like a good connection. And then with the actual interview, with the multiple faculty members, and, like, you know, the one who was interviewing me, she invited me, the one who became my mentor, she, like, invited me back after the day was over just so we could continue our conversation. Like, it just went really well. And, like, I felt really good about where the place was. Like, I just immediately sort of, like, just felt this, like, sense of homeness to the place that weekend. And so all of those things, you know, made me feel more excited and more confident, but you just don't know. And so it was not until I got that final call. So it was just you're just kind of, like, you know, degrees of being on edge, and fortunately in that case decreasing degrees of being on edge, but just kind of, like, you just are. It's just there.
Yeah. And that's, I kind of remember that too, until the document is signed, even,
right,
even just after the handshake, I'm still like, okay, it's still not signed. Like it's like there's, yeah, a whole, like, I don't know, there's always, until something is finalized, like, it's all, yeah, it's all just gonna be stressful.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
The thing that I thought of when you started introducing the topic, Laz, was the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer. Have you guys seen that movie? Surely, right?
Yeah,
I have not seen it.
Oh, interesting.
It's super,
okay,
good. Yeah,
it's a great movie.
I kind of know. I know the, like, basic premise.
Sure. Yeah, it's
good at chess.
Yeah. It's worth a watch, I think. It's a movie about a kid who's, I guess for anyone listening who hasn't seen it, it's a movie about a kid who's sort of a chess prodigy and discovers this, and then the way that his family and he navigate sort of the pressure of being the best and all the expectation and everything. And it's very comparable to, like, a lot of sports stories in that way. You know, the pressure for, like, a gifted athlete or whatever. But the reason I thought of it is that there's this scene in that movie, and I rewatched this recently with my son. There's a scene in that movie where there's, like, a big chess tournament coming up, and that is sort of that inflection point, like you mentioned, Laz, where it's like, this, you know, this is like the could make or break this kid if he's gonna, like, become the chess champion or not, right? And At that point in the movie, the family realizes, like, we're putting too much pressure on our son. And so before the tournament, rather than, like, studying and practicing and doing all the stuff you're supposed to do, they just, like, go on a fishing trip. And they don't talk about chess for the whole weekend. And they have a good time, and they're just family. And it's like, they come back and they tell these other kids who are, like, you know, pulling their hair out what they did. And the kid's like, what, you didn't practice? Like, I was just realizing, like, rewatching that movie, how much I had over my whole life, because I saw that movie, you know, when I was a teenager, how much I had internalized that concept of, like, you have something big and high pressure coming up, like, don't think about it, do something else completely different, and don't worry about it. And I don't know if that's really good advice or not, Like, don't study for the test, right? Like, just, you know, just wing it and have fun. And like,
you do fishing trips every time. Like, it's not even just your own thing. You're just like, yeah, going on a fishing trip with the family again.
Constantly going on fishing trips.
Oh, God.
but yeah, so I wondered, yeah, there was, if there was some sort of stress relief or if you thought about that. But anyway, that was the first place my head went. Cause I couldn't think of a time professionally that this has happened. And the only times I'm feeling like for me that I've had this experience is like in like dating or in relationships where I'm like, especially if I was like thinking that maybe a breakup was coming and then like kind of getting ready to go into that conversation with, you know, whoever my partner was. And like, and I remember just like, you know, sitting places for hours, just like going back and forth in my head, like, oh my God, what if they say this? And what if they say that? And what do I actually want out of this?
Goodness.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know,
maybe
similar to like the kind of stress that you might feel at a job, but like in a much more personal way. Right. And, so that's the example for me is that it tends to be around. And what I end up coming to often in those situations is I just kind of convince myself that, like, you know, usually that breaking up with the person will be okay. And that there's like a future for me without this other person. And I'll start envisioning that and imagining that. And I don't know if that's a good practice either, but that's sort of, yeah, what I, maybe a defense mechanism that I have or something.
Right. Prepping in your imagination for the future.
Right, yeah.
I definitely, like, when I'm working with a patient on making a change, and a big change for their life, like, one of the primary things I have them do is to imagine what their life would be once they've made that change. So, like...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's like a... That's a fairly basic tool for us therapists. So like you've like tapped into like something that's, you know, sort of one of the fundamental things that we ask people to do when they're helping them to make change.
And the idea is that like that gives you sort of a, well, maybe you can tell me what the idea is. I don't want to assume. Come in.
It's like a runway. Well,
say more.
No, just like, you know,
guys. I'm sorry. I'll be right started. Back.
Okay.
Yeah. Should I keep going?
Oh God, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll just go.
Okay.
Yeah, like a runway. Like, you know, you're about to do something big, but you need like a safe space to kind of like prepare yourself for it. That's on the ground or grounded, and kind of like, you know, here's my. I'm envisioning what this is going to be like. I'm not there yet. I haven't started yet, but it's like, at least I can kind of like picture it, get oriented towards it, start the movement. But it's like, you know, some sort of not quite flip the switch yet. You're not up in the air. I don't know. It's kind of like what I envisioned.
Well, I think that's great. Yeah. It. Oh, I think that's lovely. That's a lovely way of talking about it. Yeah. I think that tracks for me. It's interesting. It's part of this one underlying approach to therapy called motivational interviewing. It's a pretty common sort of tool in that approach. But it also is similar to, exposure based therapies where, in some cases you will imagine yourself in a particular situation in order to decrease your fear of that situation.
Yeah,
and this is not dissimilar. You know, if you have some concerns about what the future would be like if you make a choice, well, sort of envisioning that that future is you exposing yourself to something that could be scary in order to make it less scary. And so it works. It has these interesting sort of foundational things in psychology, kind of from multiple angles. It's pretty cool.
Hey, sorry, I'm back.
I'll
a good a yep. good chunk of that.
Just yeah, we talking figured we'd psychology.
Yep.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, we weren't sure what to do. We had a moment, and then we were just like, "Oh, I guess we're going."
Yep. Sorry.
I mean, I think Laz's exact words were, fuck him. It's yeah. really aggressive.
Yeah. What the hell, Laz?
I was going to drop your call, but, you know.
I'm off the podcast.
Then you, then you realize you don't have admin privileges in the Zoom chat. Yeah. Oh dear. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that's I think that's, what happened, Laz, with that story?
Yeah, so I mean everything went well and we signed and shook hands and everything was good and it was like a major, it was the big like thing that's happened in my like starting my own company and all that kind of stuff. Like basically the money that I got from that was what let me, you know, build the next thing. And I you know, bought another company after that. So it was all kind of like, and the other thing that I didn't really mention was that the flip side of that was that I was like essentially broke going into that meeting.
Mm.
Like I was like at the end of my, I just spent like 8 months building something of my own, you know, not making any money on it, like just Ooh. Like building it for the sake of building it because I, you know, I believed in it and I thought it was going to be like the thing that I was going to, you know, do something with or sell or, you know, be my like product that I was going to do. Mm. And that time was over and it was like, this was the chance for that item. Ooh. And so I really didn't know what was going to like, I was like, I don't know what my backup plan was. Like I would have like, you know, I mean, obviously you can just look for another job and stuff like that. But in terms sure. of like having my own company, this was the, probably the only route that would have continued that like process.
Wow.
So it was like, I think that's maybe why it sort of stood out. It was like, I was sitting there in that diner and just like, okay, this is like either I go for the next few years, you know, this is like the big thing that happens or like it all falls apart. And then I like my life changes in a different way and I do something else.
Man.
So
Whoa.
I do think that does kind of, it is kind of like relationships though. Like, cause sometimes you do know if those are ending. So it's like, when you know, that's just about to come, something in your life is changing so much. So it's just kind of like a, I don't know, those moments like really stick, I feel like.
I think the difference between the two of you and myself in this instance is that I am so undeliberate in my like career plan and choices.
Like, oh, wait, but okay, no, keep going, sorry.
I just sort of careen around and pinball into things and kind of figure it out, and like I'm not like, oh, I want to be this thing, I want to do this company, I want to build this project, right? I'm just like, oh, this seems interesting, bling bling, do this, like,
yeah. Okay, but you've worked on some cool projects, and like I can just think of, you know, off the first one I'm thinking is you had, it's like a nonprofit that was like growing sustainable food, right?
Yep.
And like you did grants for that, right? So there, I feel like maybe I'm wrong here, but like there must have been a make or break moment for that where it's like either you get this grant or it's not, or maybe there wasn't. Maybe I think it's good if not, like that's like a good sign actually, if it's not dependent on one moment. But yeah. A lot of stuff like that, like was there ever a time where you were like, if I'm waiting for this grant, I'm gonna hear on Friday, if we get the grant the program continues, if we don't get the grant it's over?
It's, you know, it grants is sort of an interesting example in this case, because, and maybe it's just because I've been doing it so long, I've never really felt too strongly about like worrying about grants, because they are so fickle and fleeting and cannot be relied on. And I learned that really early on in my like fundraising life.
Yeah.
And so like, I just don't get out of, you know, upset about them at all. Like I always have the philosophy that I'm not going to get the grant. And that is borne out sort of by the statistics where it's like, I don't know, 10% or less of organizations that apply for every grant ever get it, right? So your chances are always very, very low. And and I always have like the mantra, like, you know, on to the next one. And and even if you get a big grant, right, that sort of can change the course of your organization, that's, you know, you still got to go out and get the next one next year. And like, it doesn't really.
And it might just go away too.
And it might, right, exactly. It might just go away, right. And so I do get excited when, you know, there's an opportunity and where it seems like it's a good chance. And we got, you know, for example, for my hydroponic food nonprofit, we got like this $50,000 grant last year and we weren't sure we were going to get it, but we had asked for $200,000. So it was kind of a, you know, a step down from what we originally planned. But also that's another example that nonprofit, which I do consider to be, you know, my nonprofit, was founded by three other guys. And I met them in grad school and kind of just fell into it. They sort of recruited me to work on stuff as a, you know, just as a volunteer at first. And then I just kind of ended up taking over a lot of the responsibility. And that's everything in my professional career. It's like, you know, somebody said this thing was cool. And so I was like, oh, I'll try that. And then I got bored with that. And then somebody else was like, oh, why don't you try this? And I was like, okay. And I just, you know, it generally is not of my own making. You know, for better or for worse, you know, I just kind of roll with whatever comes along.
Yeah.
What was your major in college again?
International relations.
I thought it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's sort of interesting, like, and I don't know if this is at all sort of, you know, correlated, but I mean, it seems like the types of classes that you would take for international relations would give you a perspective on how, like, the world or the world works in some interesting ways that seem like, I don't know, they could lend themselves to, like, any range of different career paths. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't dig too deep here because I don't know that there's much. There's not much in this well, but you know, even
I mean, I was like, can I just repeat myself? I just fall into things.
Even that.
Do you understand?
That major was not my choice. It was just sort of the default major at my school. It was the major that
I cannot stress this enough. I have not planned anything.
None of this is a plan. Do you see? Yeah, that was my mom's major for me. She picked that major, and
oh,
like,
my God, that's great.
You know, or not picked it, but you know, she was sort of like encouraged me because I had no idea what I wanted to do after high school, and she was like, "Well, why don't you try international relations? You have a very international family, and a lot of your relatives have been in sort of international work in some way." And
that's true.
I did it, and yeah, I wrote about, you know, that's how I got the, you know, into the school. I wrote about whatever in my essay, like being international and wanted to study. I didn't give a shit about that, like, at all. So I don't know. You guys have seen the movie Mad Max Fury Road?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing movie. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. You've definitely now at least mentioned that once before, if not twice.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think so. I think in a previous episode. Yeah.
That's probably true. I reference that movie a lot.
You love that movie. It's a great movie.
I love it. There's, you know, there's a scene and there's a still shot that I've used before. There's a scene where they're driving on this big truck and Furiosa is
Charlize Theron.
Yeah, Charlize Theron is driving and Max like has to like sort of climb up onto the top of the truck and like onto the hood and spit like fuel into this like fuel gauge thing to give them more speed. And I've likened sort of my life to that, where like somebody else is Furiosa and I'm just like helping to keep the vehicle moving forward. Like someone else is steering and has chosen the direction.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm just like trying to, okay, this is good. We want to go that
great
way.
Let's
like,
go.
Let me help. Right.
God, that is wild.
And I told my wife that you know, several years ago or whatever. And she was like, okay, whatever. She like, didn't really think anything of it. But then I thought about it later. I was like, man, that is actually, if I'm putting her in the position of the driver, that's so much pressure to put on her where I'm just absolving myself of responsibility, where it's like, well, you picked this direction. I just helped like us get here. So I've actually tried to be more intentional about like being part of decision making in our relationship.
Well, that's really thoughtful.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like you, if it was so much like that, like my guess is you probably do more than it feels like you do. That's my impression from seeing you, or just, you know, your general, you know, seeing you from the outside doing a whole bunch of different things. It just, I'm like, well, yeah, Emilio does a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
I guess I see it less as falling into things and more as like you are someone who is interested in a lot of things and kind of picks them up as you go kind of thing. So like,
I suppose that's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
that resonates with my perception as well. Sort of like, you know, just pursuing things.
Yeah. Just trying different stuff. Sure. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's my direction. That's my choice, is do different stuff, is to not have a path.
Yeah
it's still, it's on purpose.
And you're like, go north. No, wait,
never mind.
No, southwest is the southwest way. Definitely. No, wait, north again. I actually never at any given time know what it is that you do professionally, Emilio. It seems like it's almost always in the nonprofit world, and it's something that's consulting or writing or.
But you also do side
community
gigs,
engagement.
With a steady stream of kind of like, you know, side hustles, side gigs, whatever you want to call it.
These are all the true things. Mm-hmm. Making podcasts, YouTube channels with my buddies.
Yeah. Walking dogs.
Dog walking. I was a Lyft driver for like a year.
Yep.
I remember. So weird.
I think you overlapped with my brother doing the same thing. I think he was driving.
Oh,
I have this weird recollection of being like, wait, you're doing it too? Like because my brother just told me he was like driving.
Just everybody's doing it.
Yeah. What was your brother's experience like, do you know?
I actually didn't really talk to him too much about that particular thing. He's like someone who just, not so much recently, because now he's like, he's got kind of his position is, he just works for this one company all the time. But he just did like every single imaginable job. He was like a pizza delivery person, like on top of like three other things that for like 6 years or something like that. Like he just did like, I don't know, like he was like Mr. Hustle kind of thing. Like he just did any job, and he did it, you know, whatever. I think he was one of those kind of like maximizing your time, money, sort of like, what's the like thing I can do where it's like the least amount of time and I get a good amount of money, but it's not a career. It was kind of like, that's my impression of what he was kind of up to.
It's not Lyft driving, because that thing is a scam. Let me tell you.
That's what I think. He didn't do it for that long, because I think it was like, you know, ultimately it's like, well, wait a minute, this is my car. Like, this is my gas.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Your expenses are so high. They calculated at one point when I was driving, I don't know if the numbers are still the same, but you would make like $2 an hour before tips. Like, it was shameful how, you know, based on the mileage and the maintenance and everything that you need, it was just a joke.
Yeah,
but I guess that's how like a lot of like wait staff operate too.
Yeah, but the tips,
your expenses,
I don't know, far fewer. Yeah,
it's true.
Tips are like probably better.
Yeah, it's expected more so to tip in like the service industry, like with food or whatever, versus people think that Lyft drivers make all this money, so they don't tip them.
Yeah.
Ugh. I always tip highly.
And then all this to say, we need to. Oh, I just heard yelling. We need to get away from these tip-based jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's time to have a universal basic income or something.
I have a friend who owns a hair salon here, and she made the decision sometime within the past year that she and all of the people who work for her are not doing tips anymore, and that they are simply charging what they believe their time is worth.
Yes.
To do someone's hair.
Yes.
And the prices went up on average, but it is just simple, and you don't have to think about it, and you get out of this whole fucking thing, and it's like you get paid for the quality of your work. And it's really great. It's really great.
Yeah, that's
meanwhile, my massage therapist, who is the sole proprietor of her business, sole employee and proprietor, she doesn't tell me not to tip her. And so I am tipping her, even though I don't think I should be tipping her. So I don't know what to do about it. There's no going back, but it's just sort of like, I'm like, ah, she gets 100% of the profits. It's not somebody else collecting.
Right. Yeah,
me not to tip.
Yeah, I know, but it would be nice if they let you know that they're like,
yeah,
charging a rate that's appropriate and you don't have to tip. But yeah, I have the same thing with my barber, who used to work at this one shop where he kind of must have had to rent a chair, and like, you know, he didn't charge $30 a haircut or something. And then he moved to this other shop where it seems like it's just him and these two other guys, and it seems like they just run everything, the three of them. And now he charges $10 more a haircut, and I still feel like I should tip this guy. Because that's just, you know, what you do. But then I'm like, man, I think he's probably, I think he's taking all the profit as well. So, like,
yeah,
I don't know. I wonder, you know. Anyway, I like that. He's a good barber. I like him, whatever.
Yeah, I feel like a barber tip, you kind of have to, right? Like, a lot of times it's just one guy in the shop or whatever. I don't know. I've always felt like that's like a tip situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we want to change, explicitly said otherwise.
Yeah.
Well.
No more tip. Do away with it. So I'm going to Japan soon, and apparently tipping is sort of, it's not precisely frowned upon, but it's not expected, and in some cases like people will give you back your tip. They'll be like, "Oh no, you take that," or whatever. So like I will probably not be tipping, even though it'll be a weird experience to not tip at a restaurant.
Yeah.
Have either of you seen that Shogun show that just started on Hulu/FX?
My wife's been watching a little of it, I think. Or maybe not. No, she was talking about it.
Yeah, we watched the first episode of it last night.
I watched the first episode of it last night or the night before as well. And, really fucking grim.
Yeah, Jesus. I'm like, I'm still in the mode of like, I don't know if I'm going to be watching shows that are like that. Like after, I think Game of Thrones was really the last show like that I watched that was just like such brutal violence that it just makes you feel like, not like makes you feel dead about humanity, or just like, you just like feel cold inside afterwards. And like, but you know, like there's also an element of just like those. There, you know, there was some exciting stuff in the show, and I thought it was interesting to see the colonization kind of like I think like as Americans, we're so used to the colonization story being like essentially coming across like in the beginning, at least like mostly docile, like, you know, like a community that wasn't looking to fight, you know, that wasn't looking for violence. And so at least the way this show depicted it, these people got to Japan, and Japan cared nothing for them and was ready to kill them at a moment's notice, just without a thought. Like, these people are nothing, and we are much more powerful than them. And it's such like a flip in my mind of the colonizer mindset that like I feel like they must have had. So, way it was interesting, but I don't know how much I'm going to watch. We'll see.
That's great.
That is a fascinating take and feels very, very accurate. A lot of it feels very accurate, like including just sort of like, you know, the deference absolutely to one's lord, and how like that carried on in various ways all the way through World War II in Japan. And yeah, it's pretty wild to see it even present culturally, or depicted as being present culturally even several hundred years ago in that country. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, so like there's enough that I feel like I might watch more, but I also just might be like, I don't know if I want to see any more of that level of violence. So
yeah, I'm not going to watch it. I'm like, fuck that. No, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Nope, not doing it, even with all of those interesting things to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was getting a bit that with the show The Boys, which I watched the first season of recently.
Yeah,
it's just like, oh, this is like, it's interesting, really interesting subject matter, and it's like just horrible to watch.
I've kept up with it, but I think the only thing that makes that acceptable in a way for me is that it is so over the top as to be cartoonish.
Yeah.
And so that gives it for me, like, it just gives me just enough cover to be like, all right, well, this is incredibly gory, but we're having a little laugh here, right?
Right,
we're
right.
A little laugh, right? Yeah, so let's true. Just keep it going. Let's just keep it going. We're just having a little laugh, a little uncomfortable laugh. Just to sort of like, oh, that kind of laugh.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's actually the one thing that I've said to people about the show is like, if people have asked me about it, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's pretty dark and messed up, but like it's a lot funnier than I thought it would be. And it's like, oh yeah, that's I'm just hiding in that.
Yeah, I mean, it is it is a funny show.
It is, yeah, and it's also at moments I think sillier than I expected it when I sort of first heard about it, like you know, the main dude. It's just kind of goofy, right? And like they like to play that up for a laugh, and then contrast that with like horrible violence, but also like really like gross, like sort of systemic stuff that makes me uncomfortable too. That's
a lot of commentary. Yeah. A lot of commentary on capitalism and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, that I find worse than the gory stuff, actually. It's like watching.
Yeah, I mean, there's some very creepy stuff there. With corporations and like cults of personality and stuff like that. Like that's what's really scary.
Yeah, the power dynamics and like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, the main guy in that is Jack Quaid, who's the son of Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
I did know that because he's also in the Star Trek, the cartoon Star
Trek. Yeah, Lower Decks.
He's very good at that.
Nice.
And that show is so good.
It's so good. And so, yeah, we looked him up because like we liked him in that. And now we've seen him in several movies. Now he's in like some rom-coms and stuff. And he's pretty funny. I like him.
Ooh,
he's I think one of the most charming Nepo babies who's out there.
I was just gonna say, how do we feel about the Nepo babies? That could be my topic.
Well, if they're good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, mostly I don't give a shit. Yeah. And I think most people don't. Like, yeah exactly. If they're good, how awesome. How nice for us.
Entertain, dance for us more.
Yeah, like, we'll get as many generations out of you. You just sacrifice that child on that altar. You just sacrifice that child. We're gonna
Jack Quaid smile. Yeah. Yes. I just want to see the corners of his mouth go up one more time.
Oh man, fantastic!
All right, so who else has got a topic here?
Christian.
I had a topic, but. Because you, I think, directly addressed my topic very briefly. No, Emilio. Oh. Emilio addressed it very briefly.
Really?
And very dismissively.
Was it about Furiosa?
No.
Dismissive.
I was going to ask you guys about your upbringing, in particular, the fact that both of you have very international upbringings, and I was curious about those experiences that you guys have had. However, when Amelia was talking about going into international relations, his mom said something about how, like, your family all works in this industry, and you've traveled all over the world, and you're like, I couldn't give a shit about any of that stuff. And I was just like, oh no, my topic.
That's hilarious.
So I think I will skip it. I'll either think of something else, or you guys could give me a topic and I'll just talk about it, or if Emilio has something interesting, we can just do Emilio's.
I wouldn't mind hearing about Laz's international experience.
Oh yeah, I mean, it is still a pretty cool story if it's just Laz, but
well, I mean, I can say sort of, yeah, broad strokes, like.
Well, all right. Before you share your story, I'll tell you where I was going to go with mine, just to see if it helps bring clarity to what you'll tell to us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking in terms of obviously my daughter, who's, you know, 15 months old, and I very much want her to view herself as American and like part of the world, or like somebody who's aware of the world or has experience in the world. Like, I want her to have that sort of like international view of the world, to whatever extent I can facilitate it. And so I was curious, for the both of you who have grown up in unique circumstances relative to engagement in the world, if you have sort of a, if you recall any intentionality around it, or if you ever have had moments where you thought like, oh, like this experience that I had elsewhere gives me a different perspective on the experience that I'm having here. And so those are the sorts of thoughts that I was having around this idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just like, most of my international stuff was under the age of 10. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Spain and Israel and Greece and the US for a little bit. I've been outside of the country a couple times as an adult, back sort of to visit Europe for a little while, and then lived in India for a year. And mm-hmm. I would say that, like, and this is something I think about a lot, because it was such a huge part and continues to be such a huge part of how I like view myself. And like, even though I was pretty young, like, I think of myself as like, I've been to these places and I've lived these places. And it's like, mm-hmm. and I do think of, it's like, I feel like the US is a place, you know, that's where I am American. And like, you know, I was born in America too, but, I do feel like I've had an experience. I've been lucky to kind of be that sort of, feel like I'm a citizen of the world a little bit, and feel that there's other things out there. There's other ways there's other ways people live. There's other ways people do things. There's other languages. And like, I never learned, I mean, I guess I learned the languages when I was younger, but I never stuck with it. I sort of tried to blend when I ended and came to America. I made like a real concerted effort to be American. I was given the opportunity to keep my languages that I could speak. I could speak Hebrew and a little bit of Spanish. I was fluent in Hebrew at the time when I came to the US, and that's all gone, all just like intentionally scrubbed from my memory, because I wanted to fit in the US. And, but I still like, it's such, I think around the time of applying to colleges, I would say, is when I first started to really think about this was a seminal, because you have to write these college essays and then you have to actually think about some of them. Most of them are just kind of BS. But if you ever wrote a good one, which I think I maybe wrote one good one, and it was about that kind of stuff, because I felt that's what one of the things, not the only thing, but that's one of the things that made me genuinely feel different or unique or something like that. And there's a lot of different things that can fill that role, but that was one for me, being able to kind of look back at those countries and look back at some of the stuff that was really different. And I lived in other countries, but I also lived a very unusual time in those countries. It was part of a basically a commune. So it's that's a whole different world as well. That has nothing to do with where you are. It was a huge deal for me and still continues to be. And I pursued, living abroad afterwards, and I tried to study abroad in college because I wanted to get that back. I wanted to get that sort of feeling and that comfort level with traveling out in the world. And I do think about that because my kids are not there. My daughter just turned 10 and, she went out of the country for the first time last week, or last month or something.
Right.
And so it's they have a very different, they haven't even really left this town, that I live in now. They're just going to live a different life. And that's true in about many things. It is something I think about because it was such a benefit in my mind to how I perceive the world, and it just kind of opened up a lot of stuff for me, I think, in retrospect. I didn't know at the time, but as I grew up, it became more and more important. So
yeah, you just sponge it up when you're a kid, just those experiences.
Yeah, you're just doing your thing. Yeah,
you don't realize it's having a deeper effect, but I think it often does.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, go ahead. Okay. Do you have a question, Christian?
Well, no. If you had a question for Laz, you can go.
Well, this is going to sound tone deaf. I genuinely am asking this. Is it money that keeps you from traveling?
Let's see. I would say partially, but not fully. The two main things are that, number one, every time we travel, we go to visit family. So, my family lives in Seattle, so 3,000 miles away. So it's we do a big trip and we do a long trip, and that's great. But it's how many big long trips can you make every year? And, I feel very lucky that I could theoretically work from anywhere. And so I'm we could go for 2 months to Spain or something, but it's that just becomes so much more and more difficult. If you don't just do it, it's we have responsibilities. The kids are in school. So what do we just go for the summer? If we go for the summer, they're going to miss out on all their friends. We're also not going to be able to visit our family. There's just the level of considerations. And when it comes down to just traveling for the sake of traveling, which is not what I did when I was a kid. We didn't, it was some weird form of necessity and, I guess it was traveling for the sake of traveling, but in a very different way. It was just kind of, we're moving now and that's just how it is. And it was almost orders from above kind of thing. And it just feels just to do it now, I would love to do it, but it's so much more difficult. And I think we could I think we could figure out the money if we could figure out the other things. But I think it's the other things that are make it just more difficult. And we don't have a real reason to do it besides this sort of desire of mine, particularly to make it happen, which is not, it's not, I'm not pushing for it. I just think it would be great, like, to live somewhere for a couple months. And I think everybody sort of agrees with that. But when you get down to the nitty gritty of doing it as an adult, a family of four, it's more difficult.
Totally. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel that. I feel that more and more now living apart from my family also. Because now, yeah, our big trip of the year tends to be back to Boston to see my mom or whatever. And so, and then we're like always thinking about, oh, we have to sort of sacrifice some other place that we have on our list, to make that trip. And so, but we, I mean, we really do, this all, it sounds so much like bragging, but we just like, we do travel a lot. Like
you
my,
do
Gladys and I, my wife and I, we've always loved to travel. We've been doing it since we got together.
It's great.
We travel for fun. We go for a week here or 2 weeks there, right? It's never like, you know, much longer than that. So we don't necessarily get the experience of living in another country. And I don't know that I've ever really had that. I think the longest I've ever been anywhere is like a month, maybe. So it, that's very different for me from your story, Laz. But I have traveled a ton, you know, when I was a kid. And then now it's just continued as we've gotten older. And like now we're about to go to Japan. And like,
it's awesome.
I just, I don't know. I want to encourage people to like try to travel internationally more, because I think it's great and I think it's doable. Yeah. And you know, I don't know.
And the more you do it, like I'm sure like you, it just doesn't, you're not afraid of it. Like you don't, there's no like, you know, you've figured out the logistics of it by doing it several times. I feel like that's just so, that's because that's part of it, is just all the logistics that make it seem kind of like, whoa, I don't know if we could do that. But yeah, it's like, I feel like with you and Gladys, like doing stuff regularly, it's like, it just takes that sort of like that difficult part of it off the table. And then it's more about like what you actually want to do.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, there's a sort of a practice with it. And I sort of have taken that for granted because we've done it so much that I don't really think about that part of it. And also like Gladys is particularly good at that part of it. And really enjoys all that stuff. Like she really like loves to get into the weeds with like, you know, making spreadsheets and figuring out where we're going and like what are the systems in these places that you have to navigate. And so that's helped a lot. And like I guess my mom was probably like that in a lot of ways too. Man, but yeah, I don't know. I wish for you guys to like travel, and I wish for you, Christian, and your daughter to like go be international people. And you know,
So I'm so into it. You know, a lot of what you guys talk about with your sort of travels, you know, it resonates. You know, like Laz, when you were saying how you would travel, your big, you know, your big trips would be over thousands of miles away, but it's just sort of here still.
Yeah.
And I found that I really try to resist feeling obligated to travel back home frequently, because I don't want my only big travel experiences to be going back home. Yep. And so like I am very privileged in one way, which is that Tiffany's family, like her parents, her mom, you know, always worked in home, you know, in the home. She was a professional mother of four children, and her father was able to support the family by being an acupuncturist and also owning like a few apartment buildings. And so now they've raised all their kids, they're out, they're alone, he's retired and just sort of like making money off of, you know, ever growing sort of values of property.
Yeah.
And so they just like to travel internationally, or just travel when we get together. So 1 year I'll travel back home to visit, you know, my family for the holiday season. And then the following year I'm with Tiffany's family, and we just go wherever the heck we want to go. We've been to Mexico, we've been to Spain, we've been to the Southwest. Like it's really a privilege to be able to like just sort of like hook into that, because Tiffany's folks will pay for the place that we're staying. And they would pay for our tickets if we wanted them to, but we're sort of like, no, okay, we'll pay for the tickets. But it really makes the whole proposition so much easier. so much easier.
Yep.
I was gonna mention that too. That's been my experience also with my mom. Is like, if we, because she's typically the main person that I'm going back home to see, and half the time she's like, let's go to Hawaii or let's go to Italy or something instead of like,
so cool,
you know, with the, you know, going back to Boston. She, because she loves to travel. She just came back from India herself, and so yeah, so that's definitely a privilege, and like I appreciate that part of it. Although, you know, sometimes I don't want to travel with my mom. And so, so then we have to sort of, like this Japan trip, she was asking us to do something with her around this time. And we had to be like, oh, we're just going to go to Japan without you.
You got to go. You got to go to Japan.
Well. Yeah, and my trips like to Seattle, they don't quite feel like home trips. You know, it's not something where, because I only really lived there for a little while, and it's like, it doesn't quite, I think it's feels a little different. So it still feels like I kind of push for those because I, you know, it's like, I want the kids to know that, you know, my brothers and sisters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it doesn't quite, to me, it doesn't quite have that. I think I would be more, I'd be more resistant if it was just sort of a, you know, visiting home sort of thing. Like, it doesn't quite feel like that to me. It feels like a little bit of a, you know, adventure to go, and there's a bunch of family there. We have people that we know and stuff like that. So very, very happy to be able to go there so far, like, you know, 2 years in a row or whatever.
I saw this, I don't know, it must've been like an Instagram reel or something. It was this British guy, and he was saying, you know, people always make fun of Americans for not traveling abroad or going out, you know, to these other countries. And he's like, and now I've been living in America for 4 months and it's so big here that, you know, you're practically, every state is like another country. He's like, I live in England and I can get to Germany or France or wherever in like, you know, a couple hours. But like here, you know, you're 6 hours, you're still in America. So like, it does feel like you're going to another place if you're just traveling from like one coast to another, or like, you know, to the south or whichever, and every region has very different, you know, cultural differences. Like, so yeah, it is. I mean, it's not, it's of course not the same as international travel, but like, it is something.
It is something.
And we got passports now. So, you know, we got passports.
Yeah,
we got
there you
France
go.
And, we got France and, the Netherlands sort of from that island we went to. And then I think we're going to try to hit up Montreal, Canada, or something like that in the next year, maybe. That'd be sweet.
Montreal is, you know, I just went there recently, as you know, and man, what a like lovely, what a, it's great.
Yeah,
Montreal is great.
It's great.
Yeah, I'm gonna find out soon because I've never been, and I am very much looking forward to checking it out.
You know, I'd been there before, most recently going this past year, and I had such a bummer time because I was there sort of like for a research conference, and I was there with a research assistant, and she was a real like fucking drip. And so I had like this very like meh time, the one and only time I'd been there prior. And I was so like, it was so restorative to go there and as like an adult with my wife, you know, somebody who I enjoy spending time with, and just like checking it out and eating food and walking around and going shopping. And it's just like, yes, this is a great place to do those things and feel like I'm in another country.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I want to give a plug to, it's a bit farther, but Quebec City is,
we almost went,
is amazing.
Is it like, so we were like, I've heard that, but that's like low key amazing. But then everybody was like, no, just go to Montreal. And so we did. It was great. But I have heard that's low key amazing in Quebec City.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It, you know, at least there's sort of an old city. So I think the big difference that I noticed is Montreal is a city. It's a big city, major city. Mm-hmm. It feels like a city. Quebec City has that, but it also has sort of an old town or old city part that, you know, really feels like you could be in France or, you know, Europe somewhere. And so if you want to have that experience, but you only drive a few more hours, that's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think that we're going to try to make that trip up north every year that we go to the Northeast. Like, just Tiffany and I get away, and somebody babysits for us, and we'll take like 2.5 days or whatever, and just like go up there somewhere and have a good time.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Check out Quebec. I wrote a Monster of the Week game about Quebec City a couple of years ago because it's just a fascinating place, I think.
Was it just based on it, or was it actually like, this is, you're in Quebec City right now?
It was more, you're in Quebec City right now, but then I tried to bring in some of the cultural aspects of it, and the monster is sort of loosely based on like local things from there, like local myths and legends from that area. But yeah, I don't know that much about it, so I don't really have deep knowledge of Quebec City to like.
Yeah, you have to kind of like, you know, you got an idea and you kind of wing it. Yeah. If you're going to try to make it take place in the real world, in a place that you haven't lived before, it's just like, all right, well,
yeah,
there's a subway here.
We're going to make a lot of assumptions and we're going to look at some maps.
Of course, there's a helipad on top of this building. that's great. Have you? Okay, so final question for you guys. Have you observed ever in your life that you made a decision informed by the experiences that you've had with international travel or living, like that you wouldn't have otherwise made?
I feel like
that might be hard to pin down, but still.
Yeah, like I can say a lot of small ones. Like I can just like my impression is like, I think a lot of it is also in some of the, like my general pull towards different people, I would guess is probably influenced by that at some level. This is just a theory, but that's my guess. But then I would say, like, very specifically, my decision to study abroad for a year was, I wouldn't have done that if I, you know, I don't think I would have, like, I wouldn't have had the, I don't know, desire or just like the, I wouldn't have had the pull to do that and, you know, go to India if I hadn't already kind of like felt like I could travel anywhere, sort of thing. That's my guess. So, and maybe maybe there would have, but like I had to work hard. They didn't have a program to study abroad in India. So I had to push for that a way. Yeah. So,
I didn't know that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I was the first. I became the, you know, I pushed for it. I found someone in India at this university I wanted to go to who was willing to, you know, work with UMass. And then I was like the test dummy for like, okay, here's America. Wow. Here's our first American at this school. And so it was, you know, but it was just something like, I think if I didn't have that comfort level of like, yeah, I can go places, I can do things, you know, like I had traveled a little bit in Europe as an adult, but just because I had done so much as a kid, I just wasn't, there was no, not, I don't know how many people have sort of this, a fear of stuff like that, but like, I didn't have any of that. And I know that other people that I talked to at the time, like, wouldn't have wanted to do that or wouldn't have made the effort, you know, all this kind of thing. So that was a big one. I think like doing stuff as a kid, it just made that much more possible and much easier for me as an adult.
That's great.
That's so cool.
I can't think of specific decisions necessarily, but I think sort of my general approach to like nationalism and like
You love it.
Immigrants and
no,
you hate him. You hate him. Yeah,
I'm a jingoist, border wall advocate, and that's purely based on my experience.
Because I love to travel.
just a corporatist to the bone.
Yeah, I think it's informed.
Sorry, I didn't mean to out you. I mean,
we're learning.
Those are the immediate words that it was just word association, just rapid word association.
We're learning all about my my quirks.
Extremely conservative views. Extremely conservative. Neoliberal views.
Based largely on international travel. And
yes, exactly. You've seen the rest of the world and you're just like, yuck. Yuck.
Yes, I will be going back to visit again. But
only to export my values and culture.
Yes, and get good exchange rates on Chinese trinkets.
Yeah, there's goods. There's goods that I need to bring to market, and I can only do that
exactly
if I travel abroad.
Like I said, I don't know what you're doing at any given time professionally, and I think it could very well be some sort of import export business.
Yeah. I mean, if you've listened to the latest HTMX pod, you know,
and I have.
there's a lot of interesting things.
Are you part of Hand Basket?
Hand Basket Logistics.
I've worked closely with them for years. Okay.
Anyway, let me give props to that name, that Eric came up with that I didn't know about beforehand. But it's like
you just have to now. You have to orient us to the episode.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I won't talk yet. Just the character, the person in it that I interview in the episode is the CEO of HTMX. But everybody online is the CEO of HTMX. That was what the creator said. He said, if you want to be CEO of HTMX, just put it in your bio. So everybody did this. there's several thousand, you know, CEOs of HTMX. So the premise is I interview the CEO not realizing this. And, so the guy is, runs Hand Basket Logistics. And I didn't really think about the name until I'd heard the episode afterwards. And it's like the only thing anyone ever knows about Hand Basket is like, you're going to hell in a handbasket. So he runs like a very shady delivery business where he promises to deliver anything or anybody within 24 hours to anywhere in the world.
He's a very desperate, dangerous man.
Oh, God.
That's so good.
Yeah. Anyway. Mm. All right.
Very good.
Handbasket Logistics.
Handbasket, yeah. That's the name of the pod.
Yep.
Yep.
Don't forget.
Tooth Talk, formerly Tooth Talk.
Well, don't forget.
With the Tooth Man.
What time you have to go to the dentist.
Well, wait, so Amelia, I mean, it's very late, but did we skip over your topic?
No, we didn't. It's your turn. I mean, I don't know if trying to wrap it up.
I'm ready to wrap up. And I'll just do a really short one. I have a few like short ones on my list that are
oh cool,
you know, lightning round style.
Ooh.
Do you guys ever walk around in your neighborhoods?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Are there other people out walking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, your case, Laz, might be a little a little different than most, I guess, because you're
a little more rural.
Sort of more remote, yeah. So I've noticed I live in kind of a suburban area of San Diego. And so I walk my dog every day, and I've noticed that, you know, I recognize the people in the neighborhood. And even if I don't know them necessarily, I sort of know like, okay, these people are from this neighborhood, right? They're out with their dog or their kid, you know, or it's like an older couple, and you can sort of just be like, okay, these are like the typical folks you see out every day. And then every now and then I'll see a young couple out for a walk, and I've never seen them before. And they just like in an interesting way, don't fit the profile of like the types of people that I normally see on like my early morning walks. And I always assume that they hooked up last night and now they're going for coffee.
Ah.
And I always assume this, and I love it. And I'm like, yes, right? You two just like got to, just got it on, and now you're going to hang out, and like it makes me happy in some weird way.
They're living it up.
Yeah, that's my top.
Wait, what?
Well, wait. So, first of all, I never see that around here, and I never take early morning walks. Let me think. Yeah. I don't know. So I'm trying to think if there's any unusual things I see that I like make a note of when I walk, but they're really,
it's like a branch that fell a certain way or something.
Yeah, like I saw an owl once and I made kind of a big deal of it. I didn't have my phone. And then this woman was walking by and I was like, can you take a picture of that owl and send it to me? Because like my kids, this was like 4 years ago, and my kids loved owl. Like just owls were like a big thing in the house. And
that's great.
And it was, yeah. And I've never seen one in real life. And it was just sitting there on the side of the road. And it was probably the one day in the last 10 years that I like took a walk without my phone. Like it was just like, man,
I know,
like
crazy.
What are the odds? You know, like you just, it doesn't happen that much. And like, so I just didn't have my phone and this woman was walking by and I was like, oh, look, there's an owl. You know, I tried to like, and I was like,
trying to get her excited.
Like I saw that, but I was like trying to
figure out. Can you believe
this? Yeah, but like, I was trying to figure out like what level of creep she thought I was. Like, can you take a picture of that owl and send it to me? Here's my phone number. Like, I was like, afterwards, I was like, I swear there was a good reason for this. Like, my kids love owls, but she never sent me the picture.
Oh no.
Yeah. Well, so I think she just thought I was some weirdo, like walking around like, can you take that picture and send it to me? Like I wanted her number.
What
or
a way to
like
get
that.
Someone's number.
I know, but just gotta find an owl though. Yeah. It's like how but I guess you could do it with anything. Like you'd just be right. Like, oh, did you see that branch?
Right.
That's the sickest branch. Yes. I don't have my phone though, so
send me a picture of it. Here's my number.
Wait, are you really excited about branches too? Like, is that the kind of thing that you would take a photo of?
The other day, I saw a couple walking while I was out walking the dog, and there was this older woman. I was like, can you take a picture of that couple and send it to me? Because I just am so happy that they're walking in the neighborhood. I've never seen them before.
Oh, man, that'd be he's so creepy.
Just like the levels of like strangeness there, like, not only is like, can you send that picture to me, but like, what, a picture of a couple who don't know you're taking a picture. Yeah. I feel really weird taking a picture of that couple over there, but can you do it and send it to me? I don't think it'd be right if I did it.
Oh man, so good.
Do you get some young couples in your neighborhood? I don't know what, Christian, I have no concept of what your neighborhood looks like.
Actually, I don't think I do either.
Yeah, neither of you have been to my home.
I'm Google Maps
in Missoula.
I've been to your other place in Missoula, but I think you moved.
Yes, which was great.
Which I that neighborhood, I have a very clear picture of what it would be like to walk around,
oh,
which was
so
amazing.
Beautiful.
And
so
beautiful. I don't really have a concept of how far away from there you are or like what it's like where you are.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, so that first neighborhood that I lived in was called the University District, and it's just the most lovely, like, neighborhood of Missoula where I live. And
big trees, a stream running through the middle.
Oh yeah, it's got it all. Just like it's really beautiful, and like that, you know, that river that is right next to it. Like you can float down that river, and like. Just get in and out of the water. The water is totally clean and safe, and it's just a very pleasant time. So, yeah, that's the nicest area of town. Very expensive. We live, I mean, it's a small city when it comes down to it. We live maybe a mile to 2 miles west of that. And so... you know, similar sort of blocked neighborhoods with X amount of houses per block and small streets. And it's just, you know, not as close to downtown as the University District is. And so it's just, you know, lovely. There are lots of trees and stuff and like older people and a mix of them with young families and that kind of thing. So we don't see people doing the sort of, you know, after the club walk. But we see just lots of, you know, families and friendly neighbors who are generally sort of investing in their sort of community. Like they're there and they're doing nice things on their property, just like we are. And, you know,
boring.
It's great. It's really
there's no one fucking
pleasant.
In your neighborhood, okay? That's what you're telling me.
I had chickens. I have a hot tub that's like made out of, you know, cedar. Like it's great.
nice.
Oh yeah, it smells so fragrant.
How many chickens do you have?
Yeah. Well, I had 3 chickens, and then when we had our daughter, my wife was just like, I don't want these anymore.
Yeah.
These are not worth my time anymore. And so we sold them to somebody who also was using them, who wanted them for their egg laying, because they were extremely productive.
Nice.
So we just had we had a dozen eggs every week, basically. It was pretty amazing.
Those chickens were fucking.
Yeah, that's right. That's how they make eggs.
At least somebody was. Jesus.
Yeah, that's how that works with chickens and how they make eggs. They're just like boinking constantly. Man, it's incredible though. They just have them growing in them, and they're just coming out once per day. This full size egg that you can just eat. It's incredible.
That's incredible.
It's preposterous, right?
Yeah.
How is that possible? I mean,
they do. So, like, you know, the horrible thing about factory farming type stuff is like they induce sort of daily egg laying indefinitely with chickens, and so they just, you know, their bodies completely, you know, they're eating themselves alive, basically. It's horrible.
Ugh,
when you don't have eggs from that way, they will sort of stop laying eggs for some period of months at a time, just naturally.
Yeah.
And their bodies kind of recuperate, and then they sort of, as basically 9 months of the year or so, they just lay eggs almost every day, and it's crazy.
Wow.
Crazy how they that is how they function biologically.
It's really crazy.
No,
I have
like,
a,
okay, oh, me, can I just, I need one follow-up on this egg situation.
yeah
what happens if, I mean, if they're just like, what do they do with the eggs if you guys aren't taking them and eating them? Like,
they'll eat them. Oh yeah, of course. Fucking birds are horrendous creatures. they are objectively just horrible.
And so like their own, just, they'll just attack each other's eggs and just,
oh god, they're just
okay.
Like, you know, have you ever seen, it was like an episode of Planet Earth, and there's like an egret, and you think, oh, egret's so beautiful. And then the egret is seen sort of landing among a bunch of different sort of like this other species of seabirds. And the egret like towers above them, and it's walking around just, you know, undetected essentially, or none of these other birds are paying attention to it. And it just walks over to a nest, and it just eats one of the chicks and just walks away. And it's just like, oh,
they're just dinosaurs. Ugh. Yeah.
Fucking birds, dude. So yes, chickens just eat each other's eggs. They don't give a fuck.
Damn.
So if you left them alone, theoretically, mm-hmm. for a long period of time, plenty of food, like, yeah. They would just have a huge, disgusting mess where their eggs would keep coming out, but there would just be like this like half-eaten mess everywhere.
Yeah, they'd be pecking at them and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, so like, you know, there was like one time where we hadn't grabbed eggs for a couple days, and yep, so some of them had cracks in them because the chickens would just peck at them. Huh. Yeah, man.
I guess they're food for them. Yeah.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, it's their food for their fetuses or their food for them. The only birds that are good are corvids, because they're really smart and they have feelings and stuff. The other birds are all other birds are nightmares. They're nightmare beasts.
I have two bird related videos now that I want to send you guys.
Oh great, I can't wait. Are they going to totally validate my perspective?
Oh yeah.
Yes, because that is how they are. They do not surprise you. They are as bad as you think they are, and they will show you. Penguins. Penguins do like their version of sexual assault like crazy. Oh, it's awful. Oh, God, all the time. Ugh. Incestuously as well. Just, ugh.
They're barely even part of the bird kingdom.
Oh, God.
How dare you?
They're the deviants of the deviants. Beautiful creatures, though. Beautiful, stunning, beautiful creatures.
We must protect them.
Yes.
No one is suggesting you bomb the penguins.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that was like that was that Futurama episode where they had to kill all the penguins because
Oh, did they?
What do you mean?
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh god. They're not going to make it. I mean, it's looking bad down there. Uh-huh. There's a I want to say some sort of like fungal infection or some sort of just virus that has recently gotten into the penguin populations in the Arctic, and it is like threatening their species. Oh, like it's crazy.
It's just over, huh? Damn.
Well, you know, they'll probably be, I don't know. It's like some will live, but will enough live in order to sort of, you know, have enough penguins? Like, I don't know. But like I said, they do incestuous sexual assault, so yeah. Maybe it doesn't matter.
They've signed their own
disgusting
death warrants.
Foul creatures. Yeah. Anyway.
And that's all for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in to Burn Their Assholes.
Welcome to the Birds Are Assholes show. Starring Christian.
Or on Pelicans and Ducks next week.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, I do think we should wrap up. I want to propose a game for next time.
Ooh.
Which I've just come up with and might be a bad idea, but I'm looking at the map of your town, Christian. And
okay.
I'm noticing names of places that sound interesting, and I want to see maybe if we can each look at a map of each other's area and just like be like, hey, have you been to the Loose Caboose?
What is this place?
Is that your favorite coffee shop? Like, yeah, what's...
Oh, God, there's going to be two places in Lanza's, and he'll be like, yes, I've been there.
Yes,
there's nothing else to do here.
I have also been to the second place.
Perfect. I go there every other day, and I don't enjoy myself.
You're going to have to tell us all about it, Laz.
Oh, I will.
Oh, that's good. I think that this is a really fun game.
Yeah, I'm interested. I want to.
All right, will you make sure to like just write down or the thought or make sure you remember
I'll put it on my list here.
Okay, good, because I'm so into
map
it.
Map of our town game.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to send you videos of pelicans eating pigeons.
Oh, God. All right, well, hey. Good night, everybody.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
All right.